Sadhu. I have a question. So I basically major in psychology, so I'm quite interested in sure about neuroscience and all. And I recently just started studying Abhidhamma. And right now, I'm just curious about your thoughts, like, because I learned that our heart, like, a part in our blood is the base for our rupa, like chitta and all that. But then in neuroscience, it's about our brain. So I'm just, you know, curious and confused.
Okay, so the question is by a man, you're studying psychology and you've also done some reading in the Abhidhamma, and you're kind of asking how does that kind of fit with this left hemisphere, right hemisphere brain thing? Is that kind of what you're asking?
Because I think in psychology you look at that brain, you know, control the mind and all that. But then in Abhidhamma, it's about the heart is the base, and then it's the support for the chitta and all that.
Okay. So what the Abhidhamma says about the chitta, about the heart. Okay, so there's this term in the early Buddhist texts, the chitta. And this term chitta is... you can define it in a number of ways, and it's used in a number of contexts. Okay, it's kind of a multi-purpose word. It's rich with meaning, and it takes time to explore what it means and kind of unpack it. Okay, sometimes it means the heart. Sometimes it means the mind. And sometimes it kind of means like the state of your heart. The state of your heart. Okay, so that's kind of my favorite definition. It's kind of like the state of one's heart spiritually, okay? Are we in a, you know, lovely Brahmaviharic peace? You know, well, then the state of the chit is very bright. We would say it's very bright. Or maybe we're very depressed. We have no energy. We feel terrible. We feel... you know, we regret bad behavior or something. Okay, well then the chitta will be very kind of low and very kind of, it can even get kind of dark looking to people with psychic powers. You know, they're like, oh, there's a dark looking chitta, you know. Yeah. Yeah, so it is hard to nail down this word chitta in a very clean way. Okay, I know in psychology, what psychology is good at is when they define some term, the term has a nice clean meaning usually, like a clean, precise definition. But terms like the chitta, it's not like a psychology term that's got a real nice clean meaning. Yeah. Like a very precise meaning. Okay. Now, when it comes to Abhidhamma, I personally have not studied Abhidhamma. Now, the Abhidhamma, it seems, is intent upon trying to turn this more so into a science, you might say, almost like psychology. It is perhaps like, you might say, an early attempt at something like psychology. Okay? And yeah, there are many patterns which they have identified there, which, yeah, it is true to human nature. It is true to experience. So, you know, that I would praise them for. They're like, well, okay, cool. You're, you know, kind of turning it into a science more. Okay? However, to my mind, I'm not so keen on the Abhidhamma myself. Okay, I come from a science background. I've got a degree in computer science. So I know about like hard science. I know about hard logic, you know, just like cold, you know, hardcore logic, which can be totally divorced from emotion, okay? So when I approach Buddhism, for me, it's about returning back to an awareness of emotion, returning back to emotional you know, maturity, growth in this, you know. So the Abhidhamma wants to move in the direction of science, but I want to move in the direction of, like, emotional intelligence. You know, it's more of a heart thing. It's more of a, I want to feel this wholeness, like I was saying, like this right hemisphere kind of wholeness, where the sense of self drops away. And I must set aside logic. Okay, that's the key here. I must set aside logical thinking. I must set aside this linear thinking in the left hemisphere. Okay, predominantly left hemisphere. So when the Abhidhamma beckons to me, hey, come here and do some more logical thinking, I'm like, I've done enough left hemisphere thinking. Thank you very much. Okay? What I haven't done enough of is the right hemisphere thinking, the predominantly right hemisphere, you know, kind of open up to experience, open up to awareness, you know, my body, the space, you know, see the big picture, see the big picture. Yeah. So I think the Abhidhamma was kind of an early attempt at something more scientific, something more psychological. But at the end of the day, all the happy juices I'm after, okay? All the PT and all the, you know, all the like endorphins and all the oxytocin and, you know, serotonin, that's over in the right hemisphere. Studying the Abhidhamma is not going to take me there. Even if it might try to explain it, those explanations aren't the same thing as the happiness. Okay?
Good morning, Adam. So from your talk today, can we deduce that if we want more emotional intelligence, then we must work on our right hemisphere. More on the right hemisphere.
Well, it's not like turning on a light switch, sister, where it's like, you know, okay, I want more right hemisphere. I'll just turn that switch on. You know, it's not that easy. I would say, like, go on some 10-day meditation retreats. You know, spend some time in a monastery. Spend some time walking in the forest. Spend some time walking by a river or something like this, you know. It's these experiences in nature. It's these experiences with solitude, seclusion. We can gently open up, yeah, to having more of this right hemisphere thing. But it's kind of a gentle process. It's not a. It's something you don't just consciously choose to do. Now. I've been a monk long enough now that it is easier for me to do it. You know, it's a little bit more like there's a light switch for me now because I've just done it so often. You know what I mean? I can kind of give myself a little nudge over to the right hemisphere easier than before. But I don't have this just direct control over it, like turning on a light switch. Yeah. The more you practice, the easier it gets.
So, can we say that a person who is more left hemisphere focused, they are less happier than a person who is more right hemisphere focused?
Yes.
So, the question I have is that when you dwell in this emotions, right? Will we be somehow attached? We will get attached to that emotions.
Okay, if we dwell in these emotions, will we get attached to these emotions? Now, when it comes to attaining samadhi or the jhanas or even the brahmaviharas, there is this reference in the suttas where the Buddha says, you know, if a monk or a nun gets attached to that, that is one fortunate attachment. That is one fortunate attachment. It's like, if you were going to be attached to only one thing, let it be this. This is that one good attachment. You would want to be attached to this, if anything. Yeah, so he would call this a blameless abiding. Blameless meaning, you know, you can't fault somebody. You know, if there's some monk, all he wants to do is meditate, and he keeps attaining the jhanas and samadhi, and, you know, he just can't get enough of it. You know, and it's authentic, it's the real thing. The Buddha would find that blameless behavior. So to answer your question, I guess it is possible to be attached to it, but it is blameless. Yeah. There does have to be some motivation, I say, some intention, some resolve, you know. There's this term, atapi. Atapi is like strong resolve, strong determination. Atapi. So, and it can be towards our practice, towards our how we meditate. And that is a good thing, this atapi, you know, in our practice. There has to be some of that. If we have no motivation at all, if we have no focus at all, no plan at all, well, then we'll just kind of bumble around in our practice going nowhere, you know. So this atapi kind of gives us a direction to go, you know, towards samadhi, towards the jhanas, towards nibbana. We do need some direction. Yeah. Now, if that direction is so strong that it's like an attachment, then the Buddha would say, well, that's blameless. You know, if it's kind of excessively obsessed with it. And you could call it obsessive, you know. He would tolerate that when it comes to samadhi, jhanas. Yeah. One blameless attachment. There's also the Pali term, chanda. Chanda's like enthusiasm. Enthusiasm towards practice, enthusiasm towards the holy life. Chanda's a good thing too.
Yeah. I have a second question. I think with regards to karma, right, cause and conditions, cause and effect, right, there is some form of logic behind them. Right? So we have to look at certain causes in order to understand what are the conditions. So would that be something more of is it left hemisphere kind of thought process?
Okay, so you're asking. These are great questions, by the way. Thank you. So when we look into cause and effect, yeah, we are using, you know, logical thinking, and isn't that a good thing? And I would say yes, absolutely. The Buddha teaches investigation of Dhamma. Investigation of Dhamma. Meaning like using rational thinking, logic, to think over the teachings, think over the Dhamma, you know, whether it's cause and effect, as you say, or really anything he taught, you know, how do these teachings apply to my life? Okay, he calls this investigation of Dhamma. And it is a good thing. It keeps us sort of on task with our practice, and it can give us a lot of insights about our life or insights about human nature. And those insights can be very inspiring when we have them. You know, yes, we want that. We want inspiration. You know, we feel like, yes, these teachings are alive in my life. You know, we get insight from this investigation. Now, if we overuse it, if we overuse thinking, you know, overuse investigation of Dhamma, the Buddha warns us, well, if you think too much, you will get tired, okay, overthinking will lead to, you'll feel tired, you'll feel run down. Okay, there is such a thing as thinking too much. But if you're thinking of the Dhamma, okay, you're investigating the Dhamma, well, that's blameless. It's, you know, at least you're not thinking of some sensuous thoughts or, you know, some, you know, something contrary to the Dhamma. You know, if your thinking is in line with the Dhamma, that is blameless. But you might tire yourself out if you do it too much, okay? So I would say, you know, don't overuse it. Don't overuse it, okay? And I say this as a person who has a habit of overusing it, okay? If I don't stop myself, I will think too much. Yeah. And what I've had to learn over time is, like, thinking should be used when you need it, but it's best to stop when the thinking is because I want to think. It's something frivolous, okay? It's something kind of unnecessary. I just want to think of something interesting that isn't really going to help me in my spiritual life. It isn't really related to, you know, attaining Nibbana. You know, it's just kind of things too far away from Buddhism. They're not really connected anymore to my holy life. So that's more so thinking because I want to think. Okay, so that is, I would say, not profitable thinking, and possibly even could lead me astray. Okay, but sometimes there is thinking you need to do. Okay, and yeah, I say do it. You know, like if you need to pass a test at university or at high school or whatever, well, that's thinking you need to do. You should study. You know, so do the thinking you need to do, for sure. But there does come a point where you're just thinking because you want to. And that's not so wise. Yeah, so I would say issue the unnecessary complications here. Yeah. But you can't totally avoid thinking. You sometimes do need to think logically. Okay, so right now you're videoing this Dhamma talk. You got your laptop there. You know, to run that video setup, oh yeah, there's some thinking. You know, what do you click on? What do you, you know, there's obviously some steps you follow to make the videos. You know, yeah, thank you. Thank you for doing that. Thanks for doing that thinking. That, yeah, so there is necessary thinking, I say.
When I was here, that shows our negative and appreciation for whenever I sense a by saying something to us together. So,